Paul is trying to establish here in Galatians chapter 1. And what's one of the first things that we see there? Okay, so that they're turning away from the scriptures. We see that in 1, 6, and 7, and 8, 9. So we're going to talk more about that in a moment. What else? First verse. His authority as an apostle, right? So one of the things that Paul is trying to establish is that he's an apostle. I mean, and he did establish that. And so he raises that he's an apostle. And that's something that you'll see even later in this chapter. We see that also not just in the first verse, but basically verses 11 through 17. Right? So he's trying to establish to the churches of Galatia that he was called to be an apostle, and that he's preaching a gospel in verse 11 that is not according to man. And in verse 12, that he didn't receive it from a man, he wasn't taught it, but it came how? In verse 12. By the revelation of Jesus, okay? So, one is his apostleship. In chapter 1, that was an important point that he was trying to make. The point Brother Shambly was making. The second thing is that there was some sort of a doctrine, right? There was something that they were moving away from, verse 6. He says, I marvel that you're turning away so soon from him who called you in the grace of Christ to a different gospel. He goes on to talk about it. What might that have been? What was one of the issues that Paul was battling and that the brethren were battling and that Paul addresses over and over through Galatians as we go through? Going back to Judaism. And what was one of the key issues that the brethren were struggling with regard to Judaism and salvation? Circumcision. Right? So if you look in, you know, Galatians 1, 6 through 7, you know, he talks about, I'm so surprised that you've gone to another gospel. And is there another gospel? No, there's really just one gospel, right? But another teaching, a different teaching. And he continues to try to pound on them and to impress upon them and put in perspective the role of circumcision under the gospel of Christ. And let's just look at a couple of those because you're going to end up studying those. So in chapter 2, verse 4, if you just want to flip, we're going to go over this today. But he talks about some false brethren there who basically came in, and he says at the end of verse 4, that they might bring us into bondage. That they might bring us into bondage. If you look over in 2, 11 and 12, there he talks about Peter, and we won't get in that today because that's not in my group. You'll get into that next week. But where he withstood Peter to the face. Why? Because at the end of 12, he was fearing those who were of the circumcision. That wasn't necessarily about the issue of is circumcision necessary for salvation, but a distinction that is always in their minds. If you look in chapter 3, look at chapter 3, verses 1 through 3. O foolish Galatians, who has bewitched you that you should not obey the truth, before whose eyes Jesus Christ was clearly portrayed among you as crucified? This only I want to learn from you. Did you receive the Spirit by the works of the law or by hearing of faith? Are you so foolish? Having begun in the Spirit, are you now being made perfect by the flesh? Right, such a fleshly focus that was there, and it was part of the old law. When you drop to 26 in chapter 3, what does he tell them in 26 through 29? Right, that you're all sons of God. As many of you have what, verse 27? How do you put on Christ in verse 27? By being baptized. Right? It's a physical act, but it's a spiritual. You know, by being baptized is how you put on to Christ. And he says in 28, there is neither Jew nor Greek. There's not slave or free. There's not male or female. For you're all what in Christ Jesus? You're all one. There isn't this difference. And that you are Christ, and if you're Christ, then you're going to get the heirs according to the promise that was given to Abraham. So he's constantly, over and over, if you look in chapter 4, verses 9 and 10, and he talks about there how, but now after you've known God, he's like, you've known the truth, you were taught the truth, how is it that you turn again to the weak and beggarly elements to which you desire again to be in bondage? What's this bondage he's talking about? He talked about it in chapter 2. We're going to talk about it. Here he's talking about bondage again, going to bondage. What does that mean? The law, the old law, right? Because there's freedom under the law of Christ. There's so many rules, so many things you had to do, so many works, if you will, under the old law. And the new law is different. He's like, why do you want to go back to bondage? Why do you want to go back to circumcision and uncircumcision? It's just not necessary. And then finally, in chapter 5, verses 1 through 3, he tells them to stand fast. Right? Stand fast in what? In the liberty that you get through who? Christ. He has made us free. He's made us free from the old law. And do not be entangled again with the yoke of what? With the yoke of bondage. Right? Indeed, I, Paul, say to you that if you become circumcised, Christ will profit you nothing. And I testify again to every man who becomes circumcised that he is a debtor to what? Keep the whole law. What does that mean? What's he telling him there? Around circumcision in the old law. It says if someone's going to say that you have to be circumcised to be saved, you got to take it all, right? You can't just take part of the old law. Either you're under the old law or you're not. And Paul's saying you're not. You're free from that. Christ has made us free from the old law. There's a new law that we have. Okay. So you can just see, point there is, just wanted to show you that Paul is really trying to hit hard. Don't go back. Don't go back. I'm marveled that you've gone back. Don't go back under bondage. Kind of reminds us of Egypt, right? And the children of Israel. What were the children of Israel saying? We want to go back. We'd rather be slaves. Wow, really? Okay. It's amazing how sometimes we revert to what's comfortable. We do that often as humans. We revert to what's comfortable. And when things are just a little out of our comfort zone, we'd rather go back to what's familiar, even if it's detrimental, even if it's harmful, even if it's subpar, because it's scary to move to something new. It's scary to move to something that's even healthy. And we can see that over and over and over again in our lives, where sometimes the familiar is more comforting than what's healthy. Okay. So, he, in chapter 1, talked about that he was an apostle. He talked about don't backslide back to Judaism. I'm sure circumcision was a main issue there, whether or not that was needed for salvation. And then just standing for the truth. Stand for the truth. So in Galatians 1, he tells them 7 through 9 what? In those verses, we studied that the first couple of weeks. What was the message there? Watch out for false teachers. There's one gospel. So there's one gospel. It's being taught once. If somebody comes to you, an angel, anything, let him be accursed. Now, letting him be accursed, I mean, there's some action there. you have to stand. You have to have courage. You have to have faith. And he'll talk about that more as we go. Okay. So that's just kind of the beginning, some of the key themes, what Paul's facing, what he's trying to address in the book of Galatians. And then we move into chapter 2, which is our text this morning. Could I get someone to read chapter 2, the first 10 verses, please? Okay, thanks, Ozzy. Okay, so we know that in verse 18, Paul went to Jerusalem. It says, there after 3 years I went to Jerusalem to see Peter, and he was there 15 days. And that's what he had told him in verse 18. Then in chapter 2, verse 1, after how long did he go up to Jerusalem again? 14 years. Okay. And he took with him Barnabas and Titus. Okay. If you look at verse 2, he went up how? By revelation. What does that mean? Okay, it was revealed to him to go. You know, somehow, I don't know how exactly, but he knew he hadn't been in Jerusalem in 14 years. But for some reason, right, and part of which is what we see here, it was time to go. And he was informed one way or another that it was time to go. And so Paul went. And he went. He didn't go alone, and we can think about that and talk about that as well. But he took those who he trusted and who he could rely on with him. So he went up by revelation, verse 2. So when he got to Jerusalem, what did he say? What's verse 2 tell us? Okay, and what he had been preaching to who? To the Gentiles. So what do you think Paul had been preaching to the Gentiles? So is this a new message for his audience? Who's his audience here? Who's his audience when he's in Jerusalem? Who's he sitting with? Church leaders in Jerusalem. So he goes to Jerusalem, hasn't been there in 14 years. Walks in and starts communicating to them the gospel that he has been preaching to the Gentiles. What might that be? Is that something different than what they're used to hearing? It's exactly the same. It's the same gospel message. But what's going on in this passage? What is Paul telling the Gentiles? We just read a whole bunch of verses on it. But what's his message to the Gentiles? Have the Gentiles always been God's people? No. So what's the message to them? Are they as good as anybody else? Are they not? Are they inferior? Okay. So the message is for everyone. And it's focused on spiritual things. My guess here, part of it is, Paul walks in and he tells them, I've been preaching to the Gentiles, one. Okay, because the message wasn't always for the Gentiles. I know this is 14 years and this seems like a long time, but you know, change happens slow. And we can see that because there's a debate that happens even here around circumcision and uncircumcision, and there's false brethren here who are trying, as he says, to put them back into bondage, to take them back. I mean, even here. So he is telling them very clearly, being transparent, this is the message that I'm preaching to the Gentiles, that they can be saved and that they don't need to be circumcised, most likely. This is part of the whole text in the conversation. It's part of it's part of the reason, you know, if you look back in chapter 1, all this story, Paul decides to tell this account. He decides to tell this account, I believe, because it's relevant to the issue that they're facing and that he describes in chapter 1. So he has chapter 1 and says, I can't believe you're so quickly removed from the faith. And there's people who have come in, don't listen to them. If anyone comes in and teaches another. And then also let me tell you, when I went to Jerusalem, he pulls this account out and he wants to share this with them because this account is relevant to them and their issue. He goes, let me tell you about this. I went into the leaders in Jerusalem. I hadn't been there in 14 years, and I didn't go there on my own. I went there because it was a revelation for me to go. And I sat down with them, and I told them the message that I'm teaching other Gentiles, just like you. They know the message that I'm teaching you. It's known in Jerusalem what I'm teaching you. And what is he teaching them? He's teaching them that the plan of salvation is good for them. He's teaching them that circumcision is not needed for salvation. And this isn't my little secret. This is known in Jerusalem. This is part of it. Of course, he's sharing this with them after it happened. The truth is, at some point, Paul had to go in and have that conversation. So he went in and had that conversation. Verse 2, he says, I communicated to them the gospel which I preach among the Gentiles, but privately to those who were of reputation. So he's, you know, it's not out in the street somewhere, but whether it's synagogue, wherever, but it's with those who are esteemed. It is the leaders, as we said earlier, the leaders of the church. And he says that he did this lest by any means I might run or had run in vain. Verse 2, at the end of 2. Any thoughts on that? So in verse 2, he says, I went up by revelation and communicated to them the gospel which I preached among the Gentiles. So he's very transparent about what he had been preaching and what he was preaching and what he believed, but privately to those who were of reputation, lest by any means I might run or had run in vain. Okay. He's checking himself. Do you have a comment? Okay. Any other thoughts? He's an apostle. Yeah. Because if you get alignment and unity there, it makes it a whole lot easier moving out, right? And that's essentially, remember, that's how he's using this experience right now. The letter he's writing are to the churches of Galatia. And he's saying, what I'm telling you is in unity. It's in alignment. There isn't misalignment. You're not going to go to Jerusalem and then find out that everything I'm telling you isn't true. Okay, we're in alignment. So if you can get alignment where it's difficult and where people are still hanging on to tradition, then it's easier. Yeah. Yes. Right. Yeah, there's a whole section there. I thought about going through it, but then we'd never get, I would have only taught verse 2. So, but you, for more context, you should read that. And you can skim through Acts 15, and there's about 20 verses there that go through that account. Okay. Then he goes on in verse 3. And there's so much alignment there. Yes, do you have a comment? Oh yeah, I don't think he's necessarily going for approval as much as he is. I mean, it's the revelation. He believes it, and it's about influence. So look in verse 3. There's alignment, and there's so much alignment that how does Titus feel about the situation being there? Verse 3. Yet not even Titus, who was with me, being a Greek, was compelled to be circumcised. So Titus is there. He's listening to the whole thing. He's seeing the whole thing. Remember, he's writing to Galatia. He's giving them the account of what happened for a purpose. He goes, Titus, who's a Greek, in their presence, heard the whole debate and was there, and he didn't even feel compelled to be circumcised. So do you think Titus is going to put his salvation at risk? I mean, that's kind of what he's saying here. You're okay. Circumcision is not a requirement for salvation. I had Titus with me, and he was there and heard the whole thing. And he's Greek, and he wasn't compelled to be circumcised. I mean, he's trying to make the argument and get it into their head as to what happened and why it's relevant to the issues that they're facing. Then he goes through in verse 4, and this occurred because of false brethren secretly brought in, who came in by stealth to spy out our liberty, right, to spy their freedoms, as he describes it, which it is, which we have in Christ Jesus, that they might bring us into bondage. There are always those who resist change. There's always those who resist change. And to some extent, it's not always a bad thing. But there's a time for change, and you need to know when that time is. And this change has been predicted for hundreds and hundreds of years that there will be a change. And so they should be ready to change when the Messiah comes. Okay. For us, we're told, and even Paul tells us, there is no change. There's no other gospel coming. Though we or an angel, anybody, comes after, don't believe it. That's not what was said in the Old Testament, right? In the Old Testament, they said, there is one coming. There will be a new time. There will be a new law. There will be something better. But we resist change as individuals very often, and so there were those there that wanted to go back because it was familiar. It was hard to move forward. What was their response to those individuals, verse 5? They didn't yield. I think Ozzie's version said, not for a moment. New King James says, not for an hour. But the point is, we didn't yield. And why didn't they yield? They didn't yield because it was the right thing, and it was the right doctrine, the one that they had. It was not to yield. But he said that the truth of the gospel might continue with you. There's a point there with Paul where Paul and Barnabas and all of them, Titus, where they have to decide, do we stand for this or do we not? Had they not stood for it, it's a possibility then that that error would continue to be taught and promoted through the region, and Gentiles would have to be circumcised, thinking that it's for salvation. But they stood, because that's not true. It's not a true doctrine. And so they stood, and they didn't yield. And he said that the truth of the gospel might continue with you. Remember, again, this is written to Galatia. He said, we fought for you. We fought for truth. We fought for the truth of the gospel in Jesus Christ. We didn't yield for a moment so that you're not under bondage. So that right now you don't have to do the things that some of the brethren are coming in and telling you you have to do. We fought that battle. Don't let them put you back into bondage. Don't go backwards. All right? Because it's a slippery slope. You start to take on that one. And as he said, as we read in the one verse, you know, if you're going to take one part of the old law, then you have to take all of it. And if you start saying that circumcision is necessary for salvation, then you start and you think, well, then what about this piece and what about that piece? And you keep adopting more and more of the old law. That's right. That's right. There wasn't a command that they had to be circumcised, but it was tradition. It was the old law. It's bringing the old over. Okay, let's keep moving. So if you look in verse 6, but from those who seem to be something, whatever they were, it makes no difference to me. God shows personal favoritism to who? To no one, to no man. For those who seemed to be something added nothing to me. So what's Paul saying here? Doesn't matter who says it, whether people are of great reputation or not. Where does Paul align? Where is his alignment to? To the Lord. Right, to God, it's not to man. Even an angel, right? Someone comes down, and there's some pretty, angels evidently can be pretty scary sometimes, right? I mean, you see people who see angels, I mean, they do a face plant. I mean, it can be a powerful, because even if an angel comes and tells you a new gospel, it's not the right thing. Then look at verses 7 through 9. Verses 7 through 9, at the end of 6, he says, "For those who seemed to be something added nothing to me." They didn't give me anything new. They didn't tell me that we had to do circumcision. They didn't tell me. They agreed with me. They added nothing. They didn't put any burden on me. We were in alignment. He goes, not only did they not put another burden on me or tell me that I had to do this, he says, but on the contrary, when they saw that the gospel for the uncircumcised had been committed to me, that the gospel was good for the uncircumcised, as the gospel for the circumcised was to Peter. And if you drop to 9, and when James, Cephas, and John, who seemed to be pillars, perceived the grace that had been given to me, they gave me and Barnabas the right hand of fellowship. He says, so on the contrary, not only, you know, when they saw that it was good for the uncircumcised, just like it was for the circumcised for Peter, they gave us the right hand of fellowship. We're completely in aligned with each other, complete alignment. And he's letting them know that. And he says that we should go, the end of verse 9, to the Gentiles, and they to the circumcised. And then that's where he could say, and so that's why I'm writing to you. That's why I'm here. Right? I'm coming to the Gentiles. Oh yeah. 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 Well, he was well versed. And if you look in verse 10, what was the one thing, the feedback that he got? What was the one thing they wanted to make sure? They were already alignment and everything else. Take care of the poor. Paul didn't really want to do that. Is that what it says? What does it say? He goes, I was already eager to do that. Because we're just, you know, we're so aligned. So he said, they desired only that we should remember the poor, the very thing which I was also eager to do. Okay? Good times. All right. So that's the passage. There in particular, and we don't have a whole lot of time. There were a couple of things I wanted us to think about with regard to this. So think about Paul going to Jerusalem. Do you think it was, why might it have been hard for Paul to go to Jerusalem? So he'd persecuted the church. Why not? Because he's a traitor, kind of, right? So you go to Jerusalem. He was well known. You know, as a Pharisee of Pharisees, he said. And then he left that faith. And he persecuted. So from a Jewish perspective, he's not always loved by everyone because he's seen as somebody who kind of abandoned them. From a Christian perspective, he persecuted the church. You know, in that phrase, persecuted the church, I mean, we just have no concept what that was like. I mean, he tells us how he went from house to house and he had havoc, and we know that he had people killed and that he was present. But, you know, I've seen forgiveness. I mean, I've been blessed to be forgiven in many, you know, cases and scenarios. I'll tell you, you start killing people's family. Right? And we still see it today. I mean, people murder others, and you'll see families say, I forgive the person. But that's hard. That's hard stuff when someone has done, really wrong to you. And 14 years just doesn't wipe away the death of a husband or the murder of a son or the murder of a wife, you know, for their faith. And now you're saying, oh, by the way, I was right. I mean, and you killed them. All right. So going back was really hard for him. I think it was hard because he had persecuted the church. He was still trying to show that he was an apostle at some level, and going into Jerusalem with the elders there and basically assert his apostleship, and then holding views that just weren't real popular, potentially, you know, going in and saying that the gospel is just as much for the Greeks or the Gentiles as it is for you. And also going in and being willing and not yielding for a moment around circumcision and what's required for salvation. So Paul showed a lot of courage. He showed a lot of courage. I think just because it's Paul, sometimes we just think, well, you know, he's Paul and that's what Paul does. But Paul, he's still a man. I mean, Christ, you know, wept. Christ was afraid. I mean, he didn't want to go to the cross. It was difficult. It was anxious. It was stressful. And he's part of the Godhead. And so a lot of courage for Paul to go. What do you think the difference is between courage and faith? Okay, acting on your faith. Other thoughts? Okay, so courage might be, as you both have said, putting your faith into action. One of the reasons we have courage is because of our faith, right? If you, so faith in God, his faith in God produced courage. And it allowed him, even if he had to stand on his own, I think Paul would have stood on his own. He had Titus there with him. He had Barnabas with him. But I think he would have stood on his own. I had a friend who told me once that you often don't realize that God is all you need until God is all you have. Right? And when you're alone, or you feel alone, really alone, you always have God, if you'll take him. And he's all you need, right? He can give you the courage to move forward. Paul could have the courage because he had a revelation. He knew it was God's will for him to go. He may not even have wanted to go. There may have been a reason he hadn't gone in 14 years. But he knew it was time to go. And he went. And there's lots of verses there. Deuteronomy 31:6, Joshua 10:25, 1 Chronicles 28:20 that we don't have time to look at, where it talks about how God provides courage. If you believe in God, you can have the courage to do the things that you don't want to do. One thought that I want to have as you partake of the Lord's Supper this morning that I want to offer to you is that we can always have that. Paul always had that. There came a time, even on the cross, where Christ was cut off from that, where he no longer for that moment had God. And he wasn't just alone on this earth with God, which is a lot. He was just alone on this earth. And he cried, my God, you know, why have you forsaken me? Scary. I want us to think about as we close here, I want to pose the question to you is, what are you afraid to face? And what are you afraid to face in your life? You know, Paul stood up and didn't yield for a moment for the truth. He knew what was right. He did it for his God. He did it for a group of people. He did it for himself. But what is it in our lives that we're afraid to face or that we're afraid to tackle? Is it certain relationships in our life? Are there things that are going on with us, you know, physically, financially, even mentally? Are there things, or the things that we tell ourselves, or unhealthy things that we tell ourselves? Are there things in our spiritual life that we're afraid to face? And why is that? How is our relationship with God? Because we can have the courage to move forward if we have the right relationship with God. And I want to leave you with one of my favorite passages, which is Jeremiah 29, starting in verse 11. It says, "For I know the thoughts that I think toward you, says the Lord, thoughts of peace and not of evil, to give you a future and a hope. Then you will call upon me and go and pray to me, and I will listen to you. And you will seek me and find me when you search for me with all your heart." May each of us do that this week as we face those things that we're afraid of. Thank you.